Thank you, Mr. Miller. I guess I have to get used to that introduction. Several years ago, my wife and I started a tradition. Whenever we travel somewhere together, we get a magnet that's specific to that location, and we put it on our fridge. Now, some of you might do something similar. Most of our collection is from places we've gone for the Feast of Tabernacles, but not all of them. We have one with a picture of Niagara Falls. We have a little wooden surfboard that we got in Hawaii. And we have a little green one shaped like Ireland that we got in Norway. Just making sure you're paying attention. It's a nice idea, as many of her ideas are. Anytime we go somewhere, we take a little something from that place with us. Well, in a few hours, another feast of unleavened bread will be behind us. This year, it will still be the Sabbath after the sun goes down tonight, a holy day, if you will, but we can eat regular bread again. We can eat real pizza. We will no longer avoid eating leaven as a representation of sin, at least not until next year. So as we get ready to leave these days behind, what can we take with us besides a half-eaten box of matzos? This morning, let's look at five things that we can take with us from these days of unleavened bread. Number one, righteousness takes hard work. Righteousness takes hard work. Please turn to Exodus chapter 12 and verses 15 through 19. Now, there is not a feast of God's that requires more physical preparation than the days of unleavened bread. I mean, there's some preparation for all of them, but how much physical work is really needed for the others? We start the physical de-leavening process sometimes a month or more in advance. And the same, by the way, is true for spiritual de-leavening process. Exodus 12 and verse 15. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall remove leaven from your houses. For whoever eats leavened bread on the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. On the first day there shall be a holy convocation, and on the seventh day, today, there shall be a holy convocation for you. No manner of work shall be done on them, but that which everyone must eat, that only may be prepared by you. So you shall observe the feast of unleavened bread, for on this same day I will have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore, you shall observe this day throughout your generations as an everlasting ordinance. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month at evening. For 7 days, no leaven shall be found in your houses. Since whoever eats what is leavened, that same person shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he is a stranger or a native of the land. You shall eat nothing leavened. in all your dwellings. You shall eat unleavened bread. God says to remove the leaven from our homes. And as we all know, that takes work. But he also says multiple times in this passage that we are to eat unleavened bread. The work isn't done when the leaven is out. There's still more to do. We work to clean the sin out, and then we work to put righteousness in. Turn to John 5, from verses 14 through 17. This is a familiar story to most of us. There are a bunch of people laying around the pool of Bethesda, waiting for an angel to stir up the water so one of them can step in and be healed. And Jesus finds a man who's been paralyzed for 38 years. Jesus heals the man and tells him to get up and take his bed with him. Now, this was a big deal to many of the Jews, not because the lame man was healed, but because he was carrying his bed around on the Sabbath. John 5 and verse 14, afterwards, Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, "See, you have been made well. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come upon you." The man departed and told the Jews that it was Jesus who had made him well. For this reason, the Jews persecuted Jesus and sought to kill him, because he had done these things on the Sabbath. But Jesus answered them, "My Father has been working until now, and I have been working." Has anyone here ever healed someone who was paralyzed? No one. So it's safe to say that this was hard work. God's work is hard, and it's not done. God is working. Jesus Christ is working. And we ought to be working as well. Turn now to Psalm 119 and verses 8 through 16. Now, nobody raised their hand earlier, so we've established that none of us are going around healing people. We've already cleaned our homes and been eating unleavened bread for 7 days. And after sunset tonight, we can eat leaven again. So what work should we take with us from these days? Psalm 119 and verse 8. "I will keep your statutes. Oh, do not forsake me utterly." And then verse 9. "How can a young man cleanse his way?" How do we clean out the spiritual leaven and keep it out? By taking heed according to your word. "With my whole heart I have sought you. Oh, let me not wander from your commandments. Your word I have hidden in my heart, that I might not sin against you. Blessed are you, O Lord. Teach me your statutes. With my lips I will declare all the judgments of your mouth. I have rejoiced in the way of your testimonies, as much as in all riches. I will meditate on your precepts and contemplate your ways. I will delight myself in your statutes. I will not forget your word. Righteousness takes hard work. We work to learn it, and we work to keep it. Number two, righteousness is easy when that's all you know. Righteousness is easy when that's all you know. It was work to get the leaven out. But then what happened? We've been eating only unleavened bread this week to picture taking in God's way, keeping his commandments. We've been practicing righteousness with our food. Leave a marker here in Psalm 119, because we'll come back a couple times. But turn, if you would, to Titus chapter 1 and verse 15. Now, there are all sorts of treats we look forward to during these days. Most of them are probably sweet treats or buttery treats. What's not at the top of most people's lists are matzos. Well, there's a certain 3-year-old girl who will remain nameless, who has happily requested and eaten matzo crackers. She likes them with butter, but she doesn't need butter. She has enjoyed eating her plain matzos. Now, why does she enjoy matzos so much when the rest of us know that they taste like cardboard? The only explanation I've come up with is she doesn't know any better. Titus 1 and verse 15. To the pure, all things are pure. But to those who are defiled and unbelieving, nothing is pure. But even their mind and their conscience are defiled. To the pure, to the innocent, even matzos are a treat. It doesn't matter if it's not sweet. It's special. It's still good. To the pure, inviting someone over for dinner is an expression of godliness. It's kindness. It's generosity. It's love. To the defiled, even inviting someone into your home to share a meal must be part of some sinister plot. To the cynical think there's something fishy behind every act of kindness. You couldn't possibly be nice to someone just because it's the right thing to do. Or even worse, you enjoy it. When goodness is what you know, you see goodness. Turn back to Psalm 119 now, and we'll read verses 1 through 7. We don't just put out the leaven. We bring in unleavened bread. We make it easy to eat unleavened bread by making sure we don't have any other options. And we should do the same with our minds. Psalm 119 and verse 1. Blessed are the undefiled in the way, who walk in the law of the Lord. Blessed are those who keep his testimonies, who seek him with their whole heart. They also do no iniquity. They walk in his ways, You have commanded us to keep your precepts diligently. Oh, that my ways were directed to keep your statutes. Then I would not be ashamed when I look into all your commandments. I will praise you with uprightness of heart. I will, when I learn your righteous judgments. When you seek God with your whole heart, it's easier to keep his commandments. The more we learn his way, the less room there is for other junk, and the easier it is to keep it. Please turn to 1 John 3 in verses 1 through 3. Now, it's easy for a three-year-old to see kindness with a pure heart. They haven't learned yet that some people really are up to no good. And those people will even use a show of kindness to get their selfish desires. But what about us grown-ups? Has learning the truth about the ulterior motives of some cause us to be suspicious of all? Are we maybe a little jaded? If so, what can we do about it? Jesus Christ said, if you want to enter the kingdom of God, you have to receive it like a little child. 1 John 3 and verse 1. Behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed on us, that we should be called the children of God. Therefore, the world does not know us, because it did not know him. Beloved, now we are children of God, and it has not yet been revealed what we shall be, but we know that when he is revealed, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. And everyone who has this hope purifies himself just as he is pure. As we eat unleavened bread, as we take in and give out righteousness, we become like him. We are purified, kind of like a three-year-old who enjoys eating matzos. Number three, righteousness makes things simple. Righteousness makes things simple. We'll stay here in Psalm 119, and this time we'll read verses 161 to 165. Or no, we'll go back to Psalm 119. I forgot where we were. Now, after going through the whole process of de-leavening, it's actually not that hard to avoid eating leaven during this week. If you eat all your meals at home, and if you pack your lunches, you can't accidentally eat leaven. You could bake some cookies, and even if the recipe calls for baking soda, you can't accidentally put it in because you don't have any. Psalm 119 and verse 161. Princes persecute me without a cause, but my heart stands in awe of your word. I rejoice at your word as one who finds great treasure. I hate and abhor lying, but I love your law. Seven times a day I praise you because of your righteous judgments. Great peace have those who love your law, and nothing causes them to stumble. When we spend our time doing good for others, when we spend our time studying the Bible and praying, it's a whole lot easier to avoid sin. When you surround yourself with righteousness, life gets a lot simpler. There's less time for sin when your day is filled with godliness. When your mind is fixed on righteousness, it's a lot harder to sin just because you weren't paying attention. Please turn to Hebrews chapter 11, in verses 24 and 25. Now, some think that righteousness makes things boring. Sin makes life interesting. Sin makes life more fun. Why do they think that? Hebrews 11 and verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. Sin can be fun. There's pleasure in sin, but it never satisfies. The fun passes, and you're left with nothing. But if only it were that simple. Please turn to Romans chapter 6 and verses 15 through 18. Sin, it's just not that simple as having a little fun and being left with nothing. Nothing is actually the best you can possibly hope for from sin. Because sin comes with a catch. It will take everything you have and then some. Does it still sound exciting? Romans 6 and verse 15. What then? Shall we sin because we are not under law, but under grace? Certainly not. Do you not know that to whom you present yourselves slaves to obey, you are that one's slaves whom you obey? Whether of sin leading to death, or of obedience leading to righteousness. But God be thanked that though you were slaves of sin, yet you obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine to which you were delivered. And having been set free from sin, you became slaves of righteousness. Don't confuse simple with boring. Sin is more complicated. Any excitement passes quickly and leaves nothing good behind. And sin also leaves you looking over your shoulder for death. Righteousness, on the other hand, is a different story. Turn to 1 Timothy 6 and verses 3 through 12. Now, Paul gives Timothy several instructions about what to do as a minister in chapter 5. And as chapter 6 begins, Paul tells Timothy that servants are supposed to serve their masters well, no doubt so that Timothy will teach the same to the brethren. And then Timothy 1, or 1 Timothy 6 and verse 3. If anyone teaches otherwise and does not consent to wholesome words, even the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, and to the doctrine which accords with godliness, he is proud, knowing nothing, but is obsessed with disputes and arguments over words, from which come envy, strife, reviling, evil suspicions, useless wranglings of men of corrupt minds and destitute of the truth, who suppose that godliness is a means of gain. From such withdraw yourself. Arguments and debates are exciting, but what good do they do? It doesn't matter if what the other person is saying is true. Just shout louder, and people won't hear it. But verse 6, now godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we can carry nothing out. And having food and clothing, with these we shall be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness, and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Sin may be fun, but it only leads to sorrow. Verse 11, but you, O man of God, flee these things and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, gentleness. Fight the good fight of faith. Lay hold on eternal life, to which you were also called and have confessed the good confession in the presence of many witnesses. Having money and stuff doesn't make anyone content. There's always more money, and there's always more stuff. And oftentimes, the people who have the most are the least content. Godliness, righteousness, should lead to contentment. Righteousness makes life simpler because it helps us put temptation into perspective. Number 4. Righteousness is good. Righteousness is good. Now, this one might sound a little obvious, but maybe not so much when you put it in the context of a motto. Now, personally, I think mottos have gotten a bit of a bad rap. Don't get me wrong, they're definitely not my favorite. But they're not as bad as we make them out to be sometimes. For one, you can get mottos in all kinds of flavors. You can smother them in butter, peanut butter, or even chocolate. Though, to be clear, I don't recommend topping egg and onion with chocolate. Perhaps the reason mottos are so maligned is because, at least on occasion, in our effort to make sure that we've eaten some each day, we eat them plain. But is regular bread that much better? Maybe it's just me, but I don't go around grabbing slices of plain bread to snack on. Please turn to Psalm 19. In verses 7 through 10. Now, if you were here on the first holy day, you probably remember Mr. Franks talking about this. The Hebrew word for unleavened bread is matzah, which means sweet. The unleavened bread that we eat this week, even matzos, is good. Psalm 19 and verse 7. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey and the honeycomb. The law, the testimony, the statutes, the commandment, the fear, and the judgments of God, the way of God, righteousness, is sweeter than honey. Let's read Hebrews 12 in verses 1 through 11. Now, there are plenty of sweet treats available to eat during the days of unleavened bread. There are cookies and cream puffs and even Rice Krispie treats. But all of the unleavened bread that we eat is good, even the bread of affliction. Hebrews 12 and verse 1. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us. And let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. You have not yet resisted to bloodshed, striving against sin. And you have forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as to sons. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you are rebuked by him. Do not despise the bread of affliction. Verse 6. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens, and scourges every son whom he receives. If you endure chastening, if you endure matzos, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten? But if you are without chastening, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate and not sons. Furthermore, we have had human fathers who corrected us, and we paid them respect. Shall we not much more readily be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? For they indeed for a few days chastened us as seemed best to them. But he for our profit, that we may be partakers of his holiness. Now no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterwards it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. Fruit is sweet. Fruit is good. And so is the fruit of righteousness. Righteousness is good. Number 5. Righteousness spreads, ultimately, more than sin does. Righteousness spreads, ultimately, more than sin does. Please turn to 1 Corinthians 5 and verses 6 through 8. Mr. Franks also talked about this on the first holy day. When you read this whole letter that Paul wrote to the Corinthians, it's clear that they were dealing with a lot of sin. But as we can probably all attest to in our own lives, you don't necessarily start with a lot of sin. But somehow, it has a way of growing. 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 6. Your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? Therefore, purge out the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, since you truly are unleavened. For indeed, Christ, our Passover, was sacrificed for us. Therefore, let us keep the feast, not with old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. After weeks of de-leavening, it's not a mystery to us how far leaven can spread. A little yeast goes into a lump of dough, and then it spreads through the whole thing. And then we make toast and sandwiches from that bread. And when we start to clean our homes, our garages, and our cars, we realize how many places we eat that bread. The yeast spreads through the dough, and then we spread the crumbs all over the place. And after a week of eating unleavened bread, and a week of our food reminding us to do the right thing, our minds should be filled with righteousness a little more than they were a week ago. We go through these days and the preparation for them every year so that we never forget what God is doing, so that we never forget how God's plan works. Right now, sin is spreading everywhere, like the breadcrumbs that spread through our homes. But once they're cleaned up, something else can spread. Maybe one more physical description will help cement this picture. Please turn to Isaiah 11 in verses 1 through 9. Breadcrumbs are in lots of foods, and you may not realize how many until you get to this time of year. They're used in meatloaf and meatballs. They're used to coat chicken and in several kinds of pasta dishes. But during the days of unleavened bread, if you want to make one of those recipes, you have to use something else, like matzo crumbs. Now, there are two ways to make matzo crumbs. The first is to put a matzo into a plastic bag and pound it with a mallet, or your fist, depending on how rough a day you're having. The other tried and true way to make lots of matzo crumbs is to pick up a matzo and take one bite out of it. For as long as it takes to de-leaven our home, I am convinced that eating matzos for 1 week creates more crumbs than a year's worth of leavened bread. and righteousness, like matzo crumbs, will spread all over. Isaiah 11, in verse 1. There shall come forth a rod from the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. The Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and of the fear of the Lord. His delight is in the fear of the Lord. And he shall not judge by the sight of the eyes, nor decide by the hearing of the ears. But with righteousness he shall judge the poor, and decide with equity for the meek of the earth. He shall strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he shall slay the wicked. Righteousness shall be the belt of his loins, and faithfulness the belt of his waist. Now I know it's the wrong holy day, but without the righteous life and sacrifice of Jesus Christ, this doesn't happen. Verse 6. The wolf shall dwell with the lamb. The leopard shall lie down with the goat. The calf and the young lion and the fatling together. And a little child shall lead them. The cow and the bear shall graze. Their young ones shall lie down together. And the lion shall eat straw like the ox. The nursing child shall play by the cobra's hole, and the weaned child shall put his hand in the viper's den. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. What effect does righteousness have? It changes everything. Now, our righteousness, for lack of a better term, doesn't change things with the same magnitude that Christ's will. But when you keep the commandments, when you show a pattern of kindness, when you use good language instead of foul language, people notice. When your light shines, as it says in Matthew 5, people will see that God's way works. And you never know when they'll come to you and ask, "What's up with you? Why are you so hopeful?" It might be in the second resurrection, or it might be next week. As you leave another day of unleavened bread, what will you take with you? Go ahead and take a half-eaten box of matzos. Save them till next year. They'll taste the same. But also, take the lessons that come from spending a week taking in righteousness.